You're ready to go.
Okay, I'm gonna share a couple of things that you shared with me right after the previous class. We're talking about children. You don't see children playing that much, and I read one person summed it up this way: is they mourn the loss of hopscotch marks. You don't really see that anymore. But I want you to know there's always exceptions. I also mentioned that where Sarah and I live, there are some kids that play outside, and then there's the safety issue and things like that. Things have changed. But you were sharing with me, you saw on the way here a couple of boys with fishing poles on bicycles.
Riding down Main Street.
So it's kind of, I don't want to suggest it's all a total loss or anything. There's some things that are still going on. In fact, I don't know if we'll have time to talk about it, but they're one of the interesting things that's happening in the 21st century is there's a backlash with young people in a positive way. Some of them, as they describe it, are missing a time they've never known. Because they hear about, hey, people used to go fishing. They say, well, that sounds interesting. Let's do something really crazy like that. And they'll go outside, you know, and hit the off button. And so I hope this is not coming across as any kind of pessimism. And there's always good indications that things are not a total loss. One thing, you know, I'm going to use your graph here. So if you can imagine...
If you can see this, you can't really see that one. Let's see. This one. Okay, you know how a graph works is if we were to graph change, if things are changing at a steady rate, increasing, it's going to look like this 45-degree angle. But things are not changing at the same rate. They're changing faster. And so it would curve up sharply. That way it's, I think it's called a hyperbolic curve.
In other words, the number of changes you've seen in your lifetime are much more than what your grandfather experienced. Your grandparents' lives, every once in a while, something big would happen and say, wow, that was invented, amazing. It's happening much faster now. For better or for worse, that's occurring. I don't even pause anymore really to think about it. You know, you hear in the news say, did you know they invented this, like the 3D printer? And say, wow, that's really something. And then we're off to the next thing. There's no time to really process them anymore. And that's of concern even in the secular world, let alone the significance of Christianity. People are getting concerned that it's getting away from us. It's happening so fast. I don't know if you've felt that way to where at a younger age it seemed like things changed in a while. And it's almost a joke anymore how quickly things become obsolete. I remember one guy saying, and at the computer store, just keep a trash can right by the register. Say thank you very much, and then throw it away because it's obsolete by the time you get it to your car. So it's happening faster. Progress teaches us that faster is better. Now, here's something that I don't know if you were considered before. We invented a bunch of time-saving devices. That's what we call them. What are some things that are time-saving devices? What time-saving devices do you have?
Washing machine.
You have a washing machine. It's a time-saving device.
Microwave.
What's that?
The microwave.
Microwave saves time. Dishwasher.
Automobile.
One more. Yeah, the automobile. Yeah, we all got that. What's that? The automobile. So here's the big $10,000 question. Where is all the time that we saved? Where is it? And people are studying this. They're sitting down and saying, wait a second. This is not what the future is supposed to be. Have you seen some of the old shows that predict what the 21st century is supposed to be like? We're supposed to be in floating cars, you know, at this point. It's way off. We're supposed to be lounging around having all this extra time. We have less time than when before we invented the time-saving devices. What happened? And people are analyzing this. I'm gonna use one specific example, and maybe you can add to this. We're going to pick on the dishwasher. You mentioned that. I was presenting this one time, and this one couple raised their hand and said, we use ours to store bags in it. You know, that's what they use their dishwasher for. Here's some things have been pointed about this machine, and I promise we're keeping this in mind. This is not just telling you how bad it is. We're headed towards something. One issue is that now you have more things to clean. Washing dishes wasn't as much of an ordeal. Now that you have a machine, you buy more stuff because you have a machine. And so it kind of tops out. Every time you improve, you get more stuff because it can handle it. Something else that happens is you have to work more to pay for the time-saving devices and to repair them. And the more you buy time-saving devices, the less time you have, because you're having to work longer hours to make it work for you. We become more vulnerable. Our dishwasher stopped working. Guess what we had to do? We had to wash the dishes by hand. One thing you'll notice about technology is that once it's in full swing and it's going along, when it breaks, you've become vulnerable to it. And it's a big deal. I don't know if that's happened to you recently where something has stopped working and it shuts down your life sometimes. This is something that somebody pointed out that kind of grabbed my attention. A dishwasher, and I'm not saying go home and throw away your dishwasher, but a dishwasher robs you of the conversation you would have had with your family if you did the dishes together. I don't know if you have memories of that. I bet you have memories of siblings fighting while they do the dishes. But the point is something changes. It's not an evil machine, but it changed something. Mothers and daughters aren't doing dishes together.
That sounds like multitasking.
Multitasking, yes, exactly.
Talking and washing at the same time.
Yeah, I think, yeah, she can confirm I'm not good at multitasking at all. But this is something I came across recently. Housework has kind of changed. Time-saving devices change this. From what I understand, in the olden days, housework was a family thing. The family did this. You go beat the rugs out on the back porch. We'll handle this. Everybody got involved. Time-saving devices took everything and gave it to mom. And now, not debating whether it's good or bad, but that's one of the things that happened because one person could handle it all with the time-saving devices. And as a result, she didn't have any time because she's doing it all. I don't know. There was a guy, I recommend this, I'll recommend some things if you want to read on the site. It's called Better Off. This guy from MIT went with his wife to live with these Amish-type people. They were Amish-ish. And they kind of went with them for a while, and they lived without what we would consider technology for a while. And he noticed that one thing that he noticed, I think, is of interest to us as Christians, is the lack of technology forced people to work together. Sons and fathers, daughters and mothers, husbands and wives, and friends, they would get together to do stuff because they didn't have the machines to do it for them. Whether that's important or not might be debatable. Let's look at Deuteronomy 6. This passage is pretty key, I think, to a lot of what we're talking about. So we'll come to it more than once. Deuteronomy 6, I'm going to start reading with verse 6. God's making it very clear how vital it is that everybody knows his word. So significant. So this is what he says in Deuteronomy 6, verse 6. These words which I'm commanding you today shall be on your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your sons and shall talk of them when you sit in your house and when you walk by the way and when you lie down and when you rise up. In other words, conversations. And I don't know about you, but some of the most profound conversations that I ever had growing up was while we were doing stuff. It wasn't, okay, everybody get in here, we're going to have a profound conversation. Okay, sit down. Okay, anybody got something profound? That's not how it worked at all. My dad would say, hey, I'm going to run to the hardware store. You want to go? Sure. And we'd end up talking about stuff. And I suspect he didn't plan it. He says, okay, today I'm going to kind of manipulate it to where I'm talking to my son during the hardware trip. It's not how it worked. But it was part of our lives. It was as we went about things. This verse kind of hits me pretty hard. I don't know if you have any thoughts on this verse. There's so much going on here about the diligence that's there. And it says, as you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, when you rise up, obviously the word is to be very, very much into their lives. But maybe if we do have too much stuff and we're moving fast, there's not time for these conversations. it's not scheduled. It's not easy to fit in. I'll give you a specific example. Any thoughts before I keep going on that? somebody shared this with me. It was an older woman, an older man. They said our grandkids came to visit one time. We were talking about this, and they said they showed up. I think they had three grandchildren, and the power went out for 3 days. Initially, the grandkids were, what are we going to do? You know, there's no TV, there's no video games. What a nightmare. They were thought, this is going to be the worst ever. Then time went by, started playing cards, board games. Grandpa told some stories. To this day, those grandchildren say, that's my favorite memory of my grandparents. It's the best time we ever had. And that's when everything went offline. Everything was shut down. I know of a family that would pretend that the power would go out once a week just to get them to maybe shake things up. I don't know if you've, I've more than once been in a situation where I've had to walk away from a car that's not working anymore. Kind of gives you some perspective. I remember noticing things in my neighborhood I never noticed before because I'm having to walk. One of the best things maybe that technology can do for you is stop working. I don't know if you have any thoughts on that. But a power outage seems to kind of open our eyes sometimes. So here's one thing to consider. So you think, okay, we have these devices. If I have two devices and one can do it faster than the other one, this is the better one, right? It's just logical. And if they invent something that go even faster, well, then get rid of that one, and this goes faster. What happens is we start applying that to ourselves, and we think that by living fast, that that's more efficient. If I can get more things done today, and I'm talking to myself, then we think I'm a more efficient human being. I'm making the most of my time. You think about, okay, we've got two men. Let's say one standing here, man number one, man number two. Here he is. Yesterday, during the 24-hour stretch, he got 20 things done. This guy got 30 done. Good job. He's much better at living life, right? It just sounds like that works. But then you start taking a closer look. You begin to see it in other aspects of our lives. Like if it took you 30 minutes to get to work, you're looking for the little side streets that might trim off 5 or 10 minutes. Because if you can get there 20 minutes, maybe to Windsor, if you can get it down to 15, that's better. So you shorten things. Say, okay, 1 hour to make dinner. How about if I could tell you there's a way to make it in 30 minutes? That's better, right? And you think, okay, 30 minutes to eat dinner. What if we could eat dinner in 15? Tell a bedtime story in 15 minutes. 10 would be better. Pray for 10 minutes. No, 5's better. You see, it starts creeping into things. Say, wait a second. Just because you're doing something faster doesn't always mean it's better. So these things might kind of make us pause. One thing I notice in my life is the more busy I am, the more irritated I get when things are not on the schedule. Ironically, I'm a teacher, and I found myself getting frustrated with the kids when they wanted to interrupt me, and I was like, leave me alone. I'm trying to prepare stuff to teach you. Don't talk to me about real stuff. You know, here's the very reason I'm even in teaching, and I was thinking of them as an interference because I was so caught up in getting stuff done. And maybe that's true of you. Maybe you've seen it in other people. But when we get into the groove and say, I've got to get this done, and somebody taps us on the shoulder and says, can you do this instead? We get frustrated with it. And we can't, as Christians, be like that. Jesus wasn't. Zacchaeus was an interruption. The Samaritan woman was an interruption. They were not on the calendar that day. But he's a great example of somebody who was going, as he was going through Jericho, as he was going this way, here was a situation, and he stopped and handled it. And I find it more and more difficult for me to do that unless I change something. Any thoughts on that? Are we interruptible, is how one person put it. That's important for us as Christians, I think. Have you heard people talking about, in fact, we were just talking, summers when you get to go on vacation. Have you ever heard about people say, I'm going to go on vacation, I'm going to escape. Do you find it odd that we describe our lives in the same terms as a prison? This was not the plan. So I need to escape. I've got to get out of this. I can't. I've got to get away. Well, I've got an idea. Why not have a life that you don't feel like you have to escape? Everybody needs vacation, but it's almost like we're ready to run screaming away from the things that we're involved in. And it begins to affect our spiritual lives. They used to see burnout when people were in their 40s. Now they're seeing it in people when they're in their 30s and their 20s. In the past 50 years, depression is 10 times more common. Just overwhelming things. See, this is not the place our ancestors pictured. They imagined us, you know, lounging around and, I don't know, doing oil paintings and just kind of enjoying life. If you brought somebody, I thought this was interesting, this guy said, if you brought somebody, one of our ancestors, to the present right here and showed them around at the, you know, automatic garage door openers and the dishwashers and the microwaves, they'd say, wow, paradise. But then, after a while, they'd sense something's wrong. Everybody's stressed. This is not the paradise that everybody was aiming for. We have 10 times more material possessions than our ancestors. Why aren't we 10 times more content or fulfilled? 4 out of 5 Americans report a need to reduce stress in their lives, often resorting to tranquilizers. And I love this quote. Why in such a prosperous age is it necessary to sedate so many of us? As a Christian, I think, wow, something's not right here. And I can't be a part of that. I'm set apart. A Christian, by definition, is sanctified, set apart from the world. I've got to be the guy in the room with my eyes open. As people are running here and there, I've got to be the one that maybe moves a little slower, maybe does fewer things, but has some stability in the situation. And that's not easy to pursue that. Strangely enough, the solutions are in the Bible. Let's look at a couple of things. 2 Thessalonians 4:11. It's almost like God knows what's best for us. I really believe that. Some people think that we are outdistancing the Bible, that we're kind of outgrowing it. And you'll hear people kind of refer to it in that sense. Well, it's kind of obsolete. Why not? Everything else is obsolete. I mean, this was written, you know, centuries and centuries ago. How can it be relevant to us? And we forget that it's written by the Creator. The same one who created you created this. You have the same author. It has everything. Everything's relevant that it has to say. And here's an example. 2 Thessalonians 4:11. Make it your ambition to lead a quiet life and attend to your own business. I kind of like that. It's kind of a...
Hey, you've already made an improvement.
Oh, I have?
I can't find
it. Oh, did I do? False teaching. Okay. Is it 1 Thessalonians?
Maybe.
Let's try it. You're supposed to just nod your head and go with it. 1 Thessalonians 4:11? Yes. Okay. That was a test. Congratulations. Yeah, 1 Thessalonians 4:11. Lead a quiet life, okay? Make it your ambition to lead a quiet life and attend to your own business and work with your hands just as we commanded you. And quiet is not just talking quieter and making sure all the volume knobs in your house are turned down. Look at 1 Timothy 2, maybe, who knows. 1 Timothy 2, maybe 2 Timothy. I hope it's 1 Timothy 2, first two verses. It says that we may lead a tranquil and quiet life in all godliness and dignity. And I love, somebody pointed this out to me. I didn't catch it. If you read through and catch this, it looks like it's being repetitious. Tranquil and quiet. Well, isn't that the same thing? Well, the first word in the original language means tranquility from without. In other words, arrange your life so that your surroundings have some quiet to it. The second word is tranquility from within. I think that's pretty neat that a Christian could aspire to that life. Instead of being the next rat in the race, running all over the place, you're the one who has a life that has some stability, some tranquility inside and out. That's what 1 Timothy 2:1-2 is talking about. Doing something slowly might mean you do it better. So here's some things I want to talk about for a minute of time. So let's think about it from our enemy's perspective. Now, the purpose of life, just in case it hasn't ever been presented in such a way, it really comes down to this. Your purpose in life is to someday stand before God, holy and blameless. That's what first chapter of Ephesians says. To please God. It's all about God. It's not just Sunday. It's not just this building. It's all about God. If you're caught up in the commotion and you're not there yet and making it all about him, you're doing it wrong. You are failing at life, and I would be too if I get caught up in that. So you think about it from the perspective of the enemy. He's going to try to keep us from focusing on what matters, and it plays into his schemes to keep us moving fast. Look at 2 Corinthians 4 and verse 4. And this is kind of startling on many levels because of how it refers to Satan, our enemy. Keep in mind, he's not out to recruit people. His intention is to destroy you, to sabotage your chance at heaven and destroy your relationship with God. In 2 Corinthians 4:4, it describes him as the god of this world. And it says he has blinded the minds of the unbelieving. It's possible to have a blind mind. He blinds the mind of those who don't believe. And here's something I want to say. I'm not suggesting that 21st century United States is the worst possible time and place to have ever lived. I'm not saying that at all. Every time, every place has its own challenges. But the enemy knows what he's doing. And because we're the fish in the water, sometimes we're the most vulnerable because we don't even see it anymore. We're not even aware. We are dealing with an enemy who knows what he's doing. We will win if we keep a clear head and stay in our Bibles. 2 Corinthians 2:11 says, we are not ignorant of his schemes. I like that. We are not ignorant of his schemes. We shouldn't be. I think a lot of times we are. Let's go to Luke 10. I really identify with this person, and maybe you do too. Luke 10 and verse 40. Jesus is invited over to the house of these two sisters, Mary and Martha. And I can't help but think that that Martha could identify with us. Luke 10 and verse 40. So the plan is to have Jesus over. They're going to have a nice meal together. They have certain things in mind. And you're going to notice that Martha has it all laid out in her mind how it's going to play out that night. And it doesn't. And she gets really frustrated. Here's Luke 10, verse 40. But Martha was distracted with all her preparations. And she came up to him and said, Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me to do all the serving alone? Then tell her to help me. But the Lord answered and said to her, Martha, Martha, you are worried and bothered about so many things, but only one thing is necessary. For Mary has chosen the good part which shall not be taken away from her. I want to point out, here we got the subtraction thing going again. It says, Martha, Martha, you got all these things that you're worried about? It says, it's not important. There's only one thing that matters. You got your list of things to do today, Martha? Let me make it easy for you. It's one. Make sure you're right with God. Everything else doesn't matter by comparison. And yet, it's amazing that that one thing is set aside day after day by most of us because we're so busy with this stuff. But I come back to Martha often because it says she's worried and bothered about so many things. That's me. And then he says, only one thing is necessary. That'd take some pressure off, wouldn't it? Tomorrow, you're really your only thing that you need to accomplish by the end of tomorrow. And I know there's responsibilities, but really the bottom line is, are you okay with God? Make sure that's the one only thing that matters. Yeah, I'm going to pause here. There's a couple other things I want to present to you. Any thoughts on any of this? You think it's, sometimes it can feel like unstoppable. It's almost like being locked into a roller coaster. The bar is down. You're locked in. Say, okay, slow down and, enjoy life. I can't. I'm on this ride and I can't get off. My cousin lives in California, and he took a driving test, and the question was, if the speed limit is 65 and everybody's going 70, should you A, pull over, B, go the speed limit, or C, go as fast as everybody else? He put B, go the speed limit, and he got it wrong. He says, no, don't obey the law, go the same speed as everybody else, because you'll cause problems. So break the law with everybody else is basically what they're saying. I can't help but think that that's kind of our situation. Say, okay. It's like me getting up and saying, wow, you're moving too fast. Slam on the brakes. And you can imagine the hesitation for most people is like, I don't think that's doable. I really want to know what you think. You think we're at a point in the 21st century that it's getting more and more difficult to stop or slow down? Or you think it's unrealistic? Do we need to just enjoy the ride? Any thoughts? Is there any aspects in your life where you say, okay, I have found a way to control this one little square of my life where it's a little bit more under control than it was? I don't check my email after 8. That's one thing I'm trying. I'm trying. Because I noticed I check it before I go to bed and then I think about it. And I already have enough trouble going to sleep. That's one thing I'm working on. I have friends who have other, you know, where they draw the line, certain areas.
Spend some of your time helping someone else.
Excellent. One of the best ways to deal with a lot of this is to shut down your stuff and go focus on somebody else. Jesus was a perfect example of that.
One thing I've tried to do, Brett, and it doesn't always work, but taking a little bit of time, no matter what the day, no matter what I have to do, that I'll block out a period of time where, you know, I find a quiet place. It could be in the office. It could be at the park. It could be somewhere, but where I force myself to just sit quietly and do nothing.
That's so important, and it's so hard. You'll notice people have a difficult time, including me, not doing anything. If I have to stand in a line, you see people. They can't just stand there and be alone with their thoughts. And that's a good practice to be in. Jesus did that. He would get off and take some time. Somebody else had some.
Well, sometimes if somebody does do that, they take the time. If they say, no, this is a time that I have set aside for this, we tend to say, well, that's lazy, or that's, you're not doing all that you can do. If you take that time for yourself, for to be with God. But, you know, in Isaiah, it talks about those that wait upon the Lord. And God is the controller of all time.
Yes.
Yeah,
you're onto something. This is one thing that does scare me. I was thinking about this recently. I think one thing you'll discover, let's say, for instance, they say, okay, I'm going to go off the grid. You will get people who are frustrated with you. And it's getting harder and harder to do it because more and more people are affected by you stepping out. We're so interconnected. If you go dark for a while, they're not happy. You know, I was trying to get a hold of you. Where were you? And stuff like that. So it's getting tougher and tougher.
Whose problem is that? Is that your problem?
Yeah, yeah. Well, and by the way, I know, like, there's moms, you know, if you have 7 kids and they have cell phones, I mean, that's a great way to keep track of, make sure everybody's doing great. I don't want to knock that at all. But yeah, we're talking more like the business, and a lot of it is trivial stuff. Stuff that, you know, doesn't matter all the time. Like somebody pointed out, we live like heart surgeons used to. We're on call all the time. And we're not even operating on hearts. We're never disconnected. And we'll talk about that too. And that could be good, it could be bad, yeah.
I was listening to the radio a while back, and they were talking about this lady that, through the internet, she lives in China. But after she had a child, she wouldn't buy anything from the local area. It was all online.
Huh.
And to me, it makes the world seem so small to think that more Chinese people have cell phones. Because there's more of them, partly, but then Americans. Because there's so many people in China now that can have a cell phone.
Yeah, cell phones are, you know, something that's become just part of our culture. Yeah, that's a good point. I hadn't thought about the population fact.
One thing I've noticed with the taking the time, Brett, like if I'll take that time and I do it consistently and really focus on, you know, let's say it's a half hour or whatever it is. Some of that's meditation, prayer time, but I'm just sitting there. I actually found that I can get more done in my day than if I would have just started early and gone through it without taking that time.
I need to hear that.
With less stress.
Yeah. Well, that's for preachers, though, right? That's just for preachers, right?
Only preachers.
Yeah, only preachers should do that. No, that's great. And I've heard more, and I'm trying to make myself, I believe it, but not enough to really act on it. But I think you're sure. I've heard people say that time and time again. We have to hit the ground running to get all the stuff done. But I've heard people say, no, if you stop and make sure this is in place, the one thing that Martha should have been worried about, then the rest works out. You only have the Creator working out things for you. That's all. So I think things are going to be okay if you make sure that you're right with Him. So that's, yeah, very good specific example. And that's one of the first things to go in our society. So why didn't I, you know, I don't have time to read the Bible. Are you kidding? There's too much to do. I don't have time to keep in contact with the Creator who has all the answers. You see how it kind of gets silly after a while. I'll share just a couple things with you. Well, one thing that's kind of relevant what we're talking about. Any other things before I kind of throw out one more thing? I'd be curious if there's anything else that you've observed. Did you know that we invented the clock? That was not God's invention. God invented time. We invented the clock. It was about the 13th or 14th century. Benedictine monks. It was a religious invention. And they invented it to divide up the day to devote certain parts to God. This hour will be devoted to praying to God. This hour will be devoted to meditating. It was all designed to focus on God. Regardless of any other shortcomings they had as doctrine, the monks in particular, their motivation was, let's serve God with this device. Well, secular society thought that's a pretty good idea. And they grabbed it about the next century and they started using it for businesses. And it wasn't long before the emperor in Paris set the palace clock and all the others had to match that clock on the same time, including the monks. And so the world took it and made it this thing and now we serve it. It's now I wear this device that was invented by monks to serve God to tell me what to do next. Whether that's frightening or not is kind of, again, debatable. But you talk to people and say, well, why, you know, I can't go to church. I don't have time. I don't have time to pray. I don't have time for the Bible. And what we're saying is that, well, I spent the 24-hour amount that I had. And when all was said and done, there were not enough scraps left for the one who I rely on for existence. And I don't know, there's some things that we can take a look back. We just kind of take it for granted. One thing you'll notice about technology is it starts big, and then it gets smaller, and then it gets portable, and then it becomes personal. You are carrying around a telephone booth. I don't know if you ever thought of it that way.
And the phone booth.
In the phone book, yeah, and a camera. Somebody said one time we're like what James Bond was 20 years ago. Now we could qualify as spies with all the stuff that we carry around. But it's just become so common to us. The other thing that's kind of changed, I'll just mention in passing for the sake of time, is lighting. In the olden days, when it got dark, you went to bed. And when it got morning, you woke up. Now we can stay up later. We can get up earlier. Again, whether that's bad or good, it might be, you know, you can maybe argue one way or the other, but we all know that a lot of things go on because we can stay up later. That's not necessarily good. There's a lot of crime that takes place all because of the light bulb, you know. I'm not going to blame Edison for all the murders that are going to happen in New York, but these are some side effects. So here's the point. Here's one thing you need to know about technology. Every time something big is invented, there are always consequences or side effects that nobody predicted. Always. They had certain ideas about with the car, how it would affect things. Nobody predicted everything about it. Nobody predicted drive-throughs or traffic jams. Nobody even didn't even dream of it. I'll share with you a couple of things really quick, and then we'll wrap this up. You know who's the worst at predicting what the inventions will do? The inventors. Yeah. In 1899, the patent office, the head of the patent office, wrote the president and asked him to shut down his department, the patent office for inventions. This is in 1899, and he wrote the president, says, "You need to shut down my department. We've invented everything that could be invented." 1899, and we were just getting started. Just for fun, I'll tell you a couple things that you might find interesting, and then we'll wrap this up. Yeah, it was President McKinley that he wrote. One thing you'll notice is that as we invent things, we use the thing that we invented to describe ourselves. You notice how we talk about ourselves as if we're computers? We interface, and we, you know, garbage in, garbage out. I mean, these are great analogies, but we talk about each other as if we're computers. I'm not hardwired that way. And we do that with all our, or a lot of our inventions. We talk about ourselves as if we are our inventions. There was one, yeah, the phonograph was a big deal, of course. They thought they couldn't figure out what to do with it. They thought maybe there'd be books on it, maybe for literature. Edison, the guy who invented it, thought the best he could come up with is recording the dying words of people, the last words of people who were dying. Almost as an afterthought, he said, well, in music. Never dreaming that there someday would be arenas filled with thousands paying to see because of his invention. Nobody predicted that. Interestingly enough, too, a lot of inventors predicted that their invention would end war. The Wright brothers believed that the invention of flight would end war. Jules Verne said the submarine will make war impossible. Nobel, the guy who invented dynamite, will sooner lead to peace than 1,000 world conventions. The guy who invented the machine gun says, will this gun not make war more terrible? No, it will make war impossible. Marconi invented the radio. He says it will unite the world and bring peace. No more war. The point is that really bad at predicting the stuff that we make. I'll share one more verse with you, but is there anything that you want to add to this? And we'll pick this up again tomorrow, but we're going to go to John 10 if you want to be looking up. But is there anything that you, in all of this, want to point out in particular, or any questions that you have? I reserve the right to say I don't know, but I don't know if you have any questions about anything that we've talked about.
You were talking about all the inventors, and they predict that, you know, we're going to end war, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, we're going to do something else. The one thing they fail to enter into that equation is people are still people.
That is so true. One thing that they do not enter into the equation is basic human nature. A lot of people, unfortunately, think, and the Bible teaches otherwise, man has a tendency to go away from God. Left to our own devices, we will always veer away without his guidance. And I think we think we're sophisticated in the 21st century, and as we get faster and more efficient, we think we're really close to figuring it all out. But our basic human nature is the factor that will always, always ruin it all. Yep. Kind of interesting. Yeah.
God will make an adjustment.
He says God opposes the proud and gives grace to the humble. That jumped out at me one time. It doesn't say he doesn't like it when people are proud. It says he opposes them. He didn't say, well, I don't like that, I'll leave you alone. It says he will go out of his way to make sure that pride is dealt with. So these are things kind of important to keep in mind. By the way, you know, saying is technology, you know, bad or good? I don't want to play up the idea, yeah, it was always great in the old days. Like one guy said, if you miss the old days, turn off your air conditioning, you know, and then you can experience what it was like. It wasn't always great. There's some good, there's some get bad. You can say, is technology bad or good? It's like saying, is a knife bad or good? Well, it depends. Depends on how you use it. But John 10:10 is probably a good passage to end with. This is Jesus talking. He says, he says the thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. But notice this, I came that they may have life and have it abundantly. He says, I'm not just going to maintain you. You're not just keep your heart beating. It's not just life. I'm going to give you life abundantly. And that's what this is about. Is it possible that maybe we're missing something? Maybe we're not enjoying all the blessings that Christianity can provide. And it's because we're caught up in the race, the commotion of everything. And there's some options for us. It's not going to be easy, but I'm going to make some specific suggestions on Thursday, and I would love anything that you bring to the table as far as things you observe. Just for fun, do some homework. Watch people tomorrow as you go about your business. Maybe watch yourself. And I think you'll see some things if you kind of take a step back and observe people, like maybe a couple of guys going fishing or the long line of people glued to their cell phones, kind of worth noticing some things. All right. Thanks.